good morning. Let's get started. Let's see how far we can get today. We shall continue with the process that we were busy with yesterday, looking at the clause by clause. We have instructed the Office of the State Law Advisor to report back. And I think before we go further, let's just have a report back. Make sure that the alterations, the amendments have in fact been made according to the instructions that have been given. I don't have any apologies. I take it that the I have now an apology from the Honourable Kutsi, who had to attend to some of that gym political matter. The Honourable Jacobus was still ill. She was referred back to an ophthalmologist yesterday. Those then are the apologies. The staff has been instructed, and I see the documents are now coming. This document will be labeled working document number 5. And this document will incorporate the amendments that we were busy with yesterday. As I said, honourable members, you should number this document. I see it's already numbered working document 5, but I think you should, and it's got the date on there too. So that's two things you need. So you need to know more. Thank you from the office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Keep these documents together because you can. It's very helpful when you need to go back and track what you did on a particular day. These documents will in fact help you. Can we now go over to the Chief State Law Advisor just to take us briefly through what it is that we did yesterday and to see that it was in fact done in accordance with our instructions?
Thank you, Professor. Good morning, members and visitors. On the cover of the working document number 5 was effected a date as instructed yesterday.
Supposing to turn a point of order? Can we not just spend a couple of minutes reading this by ourselves? I think we are all grown enough that we don't need to be read. And we can read things by ourselves. I mean, we can see it. If we can't see it, we shouldn't be involved in this to begin with.
Honourable members, I feel it's more procedural than casual. I think it's something that needs to be done. I know Honourable Labour Senior can save time, but unfortunately, I think we have to go through the process to make sure that you might not see anything that is that has not been according to our instructions, and somebody else might. So I think it's only proper that we synchronize what is going to be said here now with what we said yesterday. I hope it's okay with you, Honourable Member. Proceed.
Thank you, Professor. On page 19, which is clause number 3, which starts on page 18. On 19 sub clause 3, we've inserted B, a new B, which reads as follows. Determine that a part of an organ of state to be regarded as a separate organ of state as specified by the minister, which will then effectively change the numbering. The previous B will be a C and the C would be a D in 3. On on page 20, clause number 6, we've indicated a deletion on 6A of or by justifiable, and we inserted that clearly sets out reasonably and objectively justified, which is going to read as follows. Unless restricted by law, that clearly sets out reasonably and objectively justifies public or private considerations. State information should be available and accessible to all persons. Next amendment is on page 21, which is a J, 6A, which reads as follows. We've inserted in balancing the legitimate interest referred to, and we've deleted as subject to, which is going to read as follows. In balancing the legitimate interest referred to in paragraph A to I, the minister, a relevant official, or a court must have due regard to the security of the Republic, in that the national security of the Republic may not be compromised. In chapter 3, clause 7, in the heading, we've taken out and departmental. The reason we've taken out and departmental is because the bill applies to the all organs of state, and it doesn't necessarily mean all organs of state are not only departments, so we've taken out departments, anything that refers to departments. The next deletion is on page...
Mr. Chairman? May I? Would you not discuss the issue of taking out the departmental, which it's fine that they took the initiative, very to be praised, but I'm wondering whether then, I mean, that was to address A sub 3, then the same consideration would apply in A sub 3, which refers specifically to departmental policies.
Is there any objection that further amendment be made, which was not discussed yesterday? Seems to be something that is aligning the resolve and consistent what was agreed with. I don't think it's anything that should increase the temperature on the board. Can it, Sylvie?
No, it flows logically from what you have done to the bill. What you have done to the bill, I oppose, but it flows logically from what you have done. It increases the culture of opacity.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. But then, just for consistency, I would suggest that 3 merely says the policy referred to in subsection 2.
And then it goes on. Which are the policies, each organ state must establish policies. So are the policies established by each organ state. And that's the way of getting rid of the last departmental in this chapter. Clause 3, clause 8, sub 3. You see, you get another departmental there. There is no adjective to organ, unless you call it, I mean, it would say organicistic, but it doesn't work. So you need to have an adjective that refers to organ. And the simplest way to do it, to meet, is by saying the policies and directives contemplated in subclause 2, blah, 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 which are the policies which each organ of state must establish, policies, directives, and categories.
Is it really necessary to add the word contemplated? So, I mean,
policies and directives,
it must follow that it's referring to the clauses above. Why does one still need to?
Well, usually one doesn't say I for sale when jumping from one clause to the other, because you don't know. And you say, I foresee how much a ball could be. But, I mean, the state advisors can finesse it as they see it fit.
Honourable members, the Honourable Epicene is now suggesting that subclause 8.3 be further amended, that departmental should be removed. Can a state law advisor then be instructed as a further watchman to do those alterations? Can you then continue and you report back on those alterations to the next session? You may proceed.
I'm going to touch on clause 8 again, which has been discussed already. The amendment there is taking out the departmental as discussed, and also on sub 2 and 3, we swap the 2 with the 3 as per the instructions of the committee. And 2 reads as follows. Each organ of state must establish policies, directives, and categories in terms of subsection 1 within 6 months of the date on which the regulations contemplated in under section 7, subsection 1 are promulgated. We've taken out 18 months of the commencement of this act. And subclause 3 is the one going to effect further amendments. And in clause 9, which is a chapter 4, in 9 subclause 1, we've taken out from and included against and also alteration.
Honorable Epicene, can you just switch your microphone?
A very minor issue. We can maybe come back to that, as to which is the better word. I'm reading it now. Against might be better. But obviously one needs a comma after the word alteration, just to, we can, just from a linguistic perspective, come back to that. Which word reads better? Looking at again now, against might be better. Because you don't protect from alteration, really. So either word, I don't know, from a linguistic perspective, which one reads better, Chair. But just to say there needs to be a comma between the two words, alteration and destruction.
Can the state law advisors give us that option back that we didn't like yesterday? Sorry for... you recall that against used to be there and there was a...
It shouldn't be there. There should be a comma. Now, can you put the against back and report back with the against? Because you are not all. Yeah, swatches. Oh, yeah, the comment, sorry. No, because yesterday there was objections to against also, you see. Yes. Okay, sorry about that. But there's a comma, simple, easy, easy stuff. Just add a comma. Shouldn't take much effort. Can we proceed on this?
Clause 9, subclause 2. We've taken out departmental and inserted developed and maintained by an organ of state. 9, subclause 2 is going to read as follows. Items of valuable information and files, integral file blocks, file series or categories of valuable information, must be entered into a register of valuable information developed and maintained by an organ of state. In clause 10, subclause 2, we've taken out as set out and inserted prescribed, which is going to read as follows. Valuable information need not be specifically marked, but holders of such information must be made aware of the need for controls and protections prescribed in the regulations. That is the last amendment that we effected. Thank you.
Just linguistically, 10 sub 2, last word, I would suggest that the word the be deleted and prescribed in regulation.
You don't like the regulations?
It's not right. It's not a matter of my liking.
Honorable Ebrosini. I am not sure I understand why that should be incorrect grammatically. The regulations are the regulations that we are talking about. It's either a regulation referring to one or it's the regulations referring to many. I think if you leave the out, you would be grammatically incorrect. Can we go forward on our everything? Honorable Swans?
Up to you. Yeah, just for consistency's sake on this very minor issue, if we're going to say prescribed in the regulations, then we must be consistent throughout the bill. What we've said before is as prescribed full stop. So maybe just we need to decide, are we going to say in every reference to prescribed in the regulations, or are we just going to leave it as prescribed? Normally, as we would say, as prescribed, full stop, and it's implied it can only be prescribed in regulations. So let's just be consistent. Okay. That's my opinion.
Can we reconsider it? I mean, it's saying how we write the law in South Africa. All you say is as prescribed. You ought not to be referring to regulations in addition to prescription. It's one or the other. Can't we just skip this grammatical difficulty by simply stopping after prescribed? That's how it's done.
When we go to the definitions, I'll point out that there is a missing definition. Customarily, the word prescribed is defined, and it is defined as prescribed means prescribed by regulation. So once we stick that in the definitions, this problem will be taken care of, and we can just say it's prescribed.
Honorable members, to the purists win. The purists win. We shall refer throughout the Act now to prescribed, and from the state law advisors, just when we come across prescribed in the regulations, just draw our attention to that there is consensus, and we shall merely say prescribed. The adjustment will be made in the definition clause where we will add a definition of prescribed to include in the items of the regulations. Can we then proceed, honourable members? That clause is then adjusted accordingly, and the state law advisors will indicate that when we come back that in the regulations have been deleted. And I'm referring now to clause 10, subsection 2, and any clauses that we might have done prior to this. You may proceed. You finished?
Yes, I am.
Honourable members, then, if I can just draw your attention to the fact that if you now look at your original bill, you will see that Chapter 5 and Chapter 6, if I'm not mistaken, Chapter 5, in its entirety, has been deleted. And it is also so indicated that this is the first amendment that we actually dealt with, and we stopped the clause by clause, and that is as a consequence of removing national interest and commercial interest from the bill. So you need to be very careful now, honourable members. I would again urge that when you look at what it is that we are dealing with, that you first look at the original bill, because the numbering is now going to change. You can see clauses 11 and 12 are now going to be deleted. And so your numbering is going to change. You need to be careful now that when you look at the original bill, you are able to cross-reference that to the working document. So we then proceed to Chapter 6. Classification and declassification of information. Do I have any input here, honourable members?
To you and to members of the committee, when I proposed an amendment yesterday, I referred to the wrong clause simply because I was caught up in trying to rearrange the clause numbers. I was actually referring to clause 15 just before we closed yesterday. I said my most humble apologies for that. However, I do want to make a proposal to clause 13. Must be protected from unlawful disclosure against alteration, comma, destruction, and loss, and in keeping with our decision as prescribed rather than in the prescribed manner.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, are we on 13B, Bravo?
Yes. May I ask something?
The Honourable Appleseed, first, I'll get to you now.
Point of clarity, we are doing 13 Bravo, and the language given to us would be in substitution of the existing text.
Subsection in 13. It describes classified information. A, it sensitive. B, it must be protected from unlawful disclosure and safeguarded. So the point here is protection and safeguarding. Now, when you bring in sub D, when you bring Delta into Bravo, is where it starts getting itself all confused, because I think that the idea was to bring destruction and loss in alongside disclosure. But then you lose the point, which was safeguarding according to the degree of harm. And so do we not really mean must be protected from unlawful disclosure, alteration, the stuff in D, but destruction and loss, and when classified, must be safeguarded according to the degree of harm that could result. Or, must be protected from unlawful disclosure, and when classified, must be safeguarded against disclosure, alteration, destruction, and loss, according to the degree of harm that could result. Because what we try to do is to say it must be safeguarded. And it seems to me that you are losing that. Is it really worth trying to build D into B? Shouldn't they be left separate?
I'm not listening.
Thank you. Now, I would like, if the through you, Mr. Chairman, if the owner of Landers could apply his mind to perhaps a linguistic problem. As I read this bill originally, and as I read it now, valuable information is not classified, but is identified as such. If you go back to chapter 4, so state information must be determined as valuable. So it's determined as valuable. So the fact of valuable information which prevents it from being lost or altered, it's a matter of being determined, not classified. The classification of information in the bill as it stood relates only to the disclosure. By inserting, as we have done thus far, the protection against the alteration and loss, we have blurred that differentiation which existed in the original bill. Because now, when we move to Part A, we are dealing with classification, and we are only dealing with the classification of that which is not valuable information, but that which, if disclosed, can create a harm. The valuable information is by definition, already disclosed. So I think that we should keep the original consistency of the bill that made sense. And the inconsistency, if anything, is in Delta. So I would take out 13 Delta, because it's already taken care of in...
look at how then we can accommodate, because she makes a valid point, Chippers, that the safeguarding should perhaps be kept in B, in Bravo. But Delta has to come up, D, small D.
The question is whether classified information or whether valuable information can be classified.
That's what I'm saying. It's also a matter of common understanding. It's good practice not to depart from the legislative language from common understanding. When somebody tells us something is classified, means that it prevents it's got a limited disclosure. not that is in the National Archive for children to see. In the first copy of the Constitution signed by President Mandela is a piece of valuable information. We can say it's classified.
Well, ever since, so you are in agreement with the Honorable Landers then? And since the Honorable Dean Swanson is also in agreement that that T should be removed?
I think we are all in agreement. We are trying to play the words so that there is maximum clarity.
The situation would be?
It would keep it the way it is. Do you think we are in favor of the classification of genuine material which, in the interest of national security, must not be disclosed? This bill ought to be only about classification. Unfortunately, it is also about valuable information. And it's quite clear that it talks about two kinds of information. But the minute you start building the one into the other, you end up with confusion. This entire chapter is about classification. It's important to get it right in the interest of national security.
Does protecting the classified information from unlawful disclosure against alteration, destruction, and loss not be deemed to be safeguarded? It's not the same thing.
It's kind of implicit. I mean, once you're going to classify something, and you are by regulation going to say how you transport it, what kind of safe you lock it into, etc., implicit that you're going to safeguard it against all eventualities, including loss, destruction, alteration.
Because we would want to take out the second part of B, which says, and when classified, must be safeguarded, etc.
The degree of harm that could result.
Yeah.
Why? Don't you want to look after top secret stuff better than after other stuff?
Yes.
So why do you wish to take it out?
Keep it in. All right. Don't do any harm, Chippers. Maybe we can create a C, a small C, that says when classified must be safeguarded according to the degree of harm, etc.
Chairman, I was reading this because there is no, peculiar enough, there is no comma after end and classified. That is what one would have done. And I was reading that must be protected from unlawful disclosure to the degree, so that to the degree classified relates to both. What I would suggest to you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Landers, must be protected from unlawful disclosure and classified, and when classified according to the degree. I would eliminate when and must be safeguarded.
Well, Chair, I'm going to go for a slightly different approach. A and B. B must read as follows. Must be protected from unlawful disclosure against alteration, destruction, and loss in the prescribed manner. Semicolon. Then we bring in a C that says must be safeguarded according to the degree of harm that could result from its unlawful disclosure. Full stop. The D comes out. I think that solves all our problems, Chief.
No, I think one of my members, you have seen the issue. Because one can have a situation where classified information is merely protected from disclosure, because later on I think we do have offences where those that destroy classified information or alter classified information could be guilty of an offence. It must be the case that classified information receives that protection too, the similar protection that valuable information is going to have. One cannot have people interfering. Imagine that a report, for example, is legitimate in all sense, and it has been lawfully and legitimately classified. But somebody then alters that thing, and alters it in such a way that it now becomes a document that should be made available in terms of the adjustments that we're making in terms of the public interest thing, the narrow override public interest thing. That document would then be made available, or the police officer that's dealing with the matter should make that document available, and really there has been a unlawful activity there, and somebody should be charged with that. So I think that, that the way you have come to the additional clause, Honourable Landers, that does help somewhat. But I think as long as the Honourable Members see there is a necessity, it cannot be the case that classified information cannot be protected from alteration and destruction and loss. So, the actual wording now, Honourable Dean Swanfield.
I'm just wondering whether it might not be useful, because you're addressing the exact point, to look at the offences, Clause 35. For example, any person who intentionally and without authority interferes with classified information in a way which causes such information to be modified, destroyed, or otherwise rendered ineffective is guilty of an offence that carries 5 years but not exceeding 10. So, I mean, that is your... There's the offence that you refer to. It talks about modification, destruction, rendered ineffective. And the rest of the clause, of course, deals with denials of service, with hacking, with the design of computer programs designed to overcome your security measures. So there is a lot of attention paid to how you must not intercept, change, modify, classified information. It's a long, long section that's devoted to it. Which, now, does that not imply that you may not need to deal with it here, or perhaps you want to use different words, because the words you've been using are the ones that apply to valuable information. Alteration, destruction, loss. Maybe instead you want to talk about modification, destruction, rendering ineffective.
I think we got the situation covered.
You think?
Yes, I think we can come back to that. But, yes, Honourable.
Just I'm going to say something which is obvious, but I think the understanding is that in issues like this, in which there is no policy difference, so we can always come back and refine the language if any of us at a later time realize that there is a better formulation or there is lack of clarity in the present formulation.
But can we agree that the state law allows is instructed to do the alteration and to add the extra clause that the Honourable Landers referred to must be safeguarded with the degree of harm that you get the actual wording.
Can you get the correct wording for the
Honourable Landers?
Chair, 13A is as it is. 13B will read, must be protected from unlawful disclosure against alteration, destruction, and loss as prescribed. And then we bring in a C, which reads, and must be safeguarded according to the degree of harm that could result from its unlawful disclosure. And D comes out.
And C becomes D.
No. Why do you want a D? A, B, and D? I thought C follows B, Che. E, what was D? No, then there's this consequential rearrangement of the whole clause. Sorry, I misunderstood you. My apologies, Che.
The Honourable Smuts is now suggesting that this modification that appears in the offences should should perhaps also be included in. Will the state law advisors just make a note of that? That when we get to the offences clause, we might want to refer back to this clause to see whether there's a consistency in terms of the offence and what classified information is in fact held to be in terms of this clause 30. Then, honourable members, can we then proceed to clause 14? The honourable lord.
Chair, we want to put forward a proposed amendment to clause 14.1c. It reads as follows: the classified information has been entered into. The words "a departmental" come out, and the word "the" is brought in, so entered into the register of the classified information contemplated in, and then it reads section 9.2, and I trust that I'm referring to the correct section because we are going to engage in renumbering, but my reading is that it's section 9.2.
Under 9, you must have a register of valuable information, and on the other one, a register of classified information, and it stands to reason that this must be two registers, because the register of classified information is going to be classified itself, while the register of valuable information will be as open as possible to the public. So there must be two registers.
That's correct, Chief. We're dealing with classified information here, so my reference to 9.2 deals with valuable information. And 9.2 says there must be a register of valuable information.
Just for you. The Honourable Dean Schmatzfeld.
Yeah, but you must keep them separate. The bill deals with two sides of
the Honourable Swartz.
Chair, the way forward is to draft a 9.2 here, limit to 9.2. That you would want to define this now, register that you. A register of classified information. Make it consistent with 9.2. The words were added to "valid and maintained by an organ of state."
What clause are you referring to?
I mean, proving 14C by just tying it up with 9.2, but it's two separate registers. But obviously, you want to use the same, similar language, referring to, because in 9.2 you say a departmental register of valuable information developed and maintained by an organ of state. Here you should say a register of classified information developed and maintained by an organ of state. So it's just this wording. We understand the sentiment is to have two separate registers.
Honourable,
may I move on to a separate point under this clause? We move the deletion of sub 2, as appears in our paperwork. The reason is the following. This provides for the classification not only of items, which is the first word, or files, the second word, but integral file blocks, file series, categories. Whole categories of state information may be determined and classified. And all individual items of information that fall within such classified file integral, file block, file series, or category are considered to be classified. And that, as I argued yesterday under a different clause, is contrary to South African information law and many judgments. Section 28 of POIA, I think I have the number right, dictates that the principle of the severability of information, you can withhold or classify or keep away from disclosure information which either under POIA or under the classification national security definition may be kept from disclosure, but you can't keep the whole file or the whole file block or the whole series. You must at all times sever the information that can be disclosed publicly and make that publicly available. We saw that happen, for example, with the Masetla affidavits in the case of independent newspapers versus. That's not the only judgment where it is dealt with. But we can't now here in law say that entire file blocks and categories may be classified. Somebody will have to apply their mind and classify only what truly deserves classification. Deletion of substitute.
Proceeding and then the Honorable Swartz.
I think the Honorable Swartz, okay, was before that. Good, please. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would like to, if you would, conduct a discussion on this item also with respect to 16.6, which reads, when state information is categorized as classified, all individual items of information that fall within a classified category are automatically regarded as classified. What this means is that once you classify the box, everything inside the box is classified. So, and we need to, the first issue is to understand that I've got some problems. What is the relation of the possible overlapping between 14.2 and 16.6? We submitted an amendment to 16.6, deleting it, because we felt that it was covered under 14.2. And in substitution, we suggested the clause that read, information shall not be subject to bulk classification or classification by category, unless the applicable classification is warranted in respect of each piece of relevant information. You can't classify a secret, the entire telephone book, because it's got the private phone number of the president. So one item of secrecy doesn't justify the classification of everything. Now, this is a real risk. As you know, Mr. Chairman, wherever there is an element of secrecy, there is an aspect of an operation, it's very easy to slap a top secret label onto everything, from A to Z. So that, I mean, you cannot even get information on the supplier of food to the national intelligence and how much they pay for sandwiches, because it becomes part and parcel of an ongoing classified information. So that's our position.
Chair, I want to support my colleagues and just request the ANC to look at their own document where they indicated that express a concern in this section where they say we need to limit the exercise of discretion in this process. So already from the ANC side, there is a concern about wide discretion. And by this block categorization, we are in fact having a very wide, granting the minister a very wide discretion, which in our view is overbroad. It is set out in our document. There's a further implication if we don't narrow this down. If you look at a previous section 7.3b, which refers to the minister having to prescribe categories of information. The minister has to give notice in the Gazette about categories of information he intends classifying, and he has to take into account comments from the public that will be received as a result of a notice of classification. Now, if you classify so broadly, how will the minister be able to consider comments from the public? And it would, in my view, give lip service to that clause 7.3b, because you're going to just have a classification so broadly, the minister, how is the minister going to properly entertain comments from the public? And I believe that's a further argument to limit the bulk classification, the broad categories that we need to consider. Firstly, therefore, that it impacts, it gives the minister too broad a discretion, which the ANC itself indicates we need to limit. And secondly, it impacts upon the position of public participation. It results in lip service being paid to clause 7.3b, when the public can make comments as to which categories of information are being classified. Thank you, Chair.
Take advantage before the ANC reacts to what is being said. There is an additional element. See, we haven't done the definition, but a critical aspect is to grapple with what it is that is being classified. In terms of the definition and the law, it is not the material bearer of information which is classified, whether it's a piece of paper, it's the DVD or the book, it's the information itself that is classified. So once information is classified, even if one erases the top secret sign or is conveyed differently, the information remains classified, and that's general understanding. Now, what is the information, the piece of information? It's defined quite broadly, but we need to ask ourselves, what are the boundaries? I mean, a document contains some pieces of information. Again, the telephone book, all sorts of information. So it is also a matter of defining the beginning and the end of the information. If one goes through the exercise, I submit to you, Mr. Chairman, the entire notion of bulk classification or classification by category, integral file block, is not required, because all that could be, the entire bulk could be identified and considered as the information. And it seems to me that both having 15.2 and 16.6 unnecessarily complicate things, when a proper reading of the definition of information would be such that if it is a bunch of things in bulk, it still is information to be classified.
Honourable members, can I offer some assistance here? You want to speak, Honourable Member?
Having listened very carefully to both Stan Mussini and Dean Smuts, perhaps we should go back. It seems to me the problem lies with integral file block. Integral file block, and I have to refer to the definitions yet, forgive me for doing that, reads as follows: means a distinct component of a file series that must be maintained as a separate unit to ensure the integrity of the records, and may include a set of records covering either a specific topic or a period of time. Essentially, that is what we're trying to cater for.
I mean, that supports our argument.
Yeah. No, it doesn't, actually, because you're saying he's going to just classify everything. And that's not what we're saying.
Before I hear you, Honorable Swartz, the issue that you're dealing with now is going to take a lot of time in terms of explanation. Because unless you understand the classification processes within the intelligence community and how these things are dealt with, one can understand that you would argue for this forward watching. Rather than it would trouble you, your thinking, that there's possible room for abuse here. But the way things work in the intelligence community and the way one deals with these documents is quite a complex way. And I think I would propose that we flag this particular clause so that we can spend more time on the explanations and that there can be more interaction in trying to persuade those that are a little bit concerned that there would be an abuse of the classification powers when looking at this particular thing. If we can flag this clause on, remember, I think it would save us.
Yeah,
we'd come back to that.
We agree with that.
So then can we go on? And clause 13 will be flagged and we'll come back to that.
Together with 16.6, if you would. 16.5, if you would. 16.6.
Honourable members, can we deal and when we get there then, you see? When we get there, then you will obviously make that close. So can we go on to clause 14?
It would be useful if we could have all the three thresholds, because what we have now, we got harmful, endanger the security, and severe harm. So if we could see how all three of them get replaced, if that was going to happen, at least would assist me to have a better appreciation of the first one.
Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Chair. This is an improvement. introduced in the threshold test and brings it in line with the prior threshold tests, and it introduces the objective test, which is the standard measure of reasonableness. My question is, we just need to consider why the prior test refers only to could reasonably be expected to cause demonstrable harm. Why do we also have to say is likely? So there's a dual test that is likely or could reasonably be expected. I would prefer to bring it in line with the prior test, which refers only to could reasonably be expected to cause demonstrable harm. You don't have a dual test there. Maybe we could hear the motivation why it's a dual test. Likely and, because obviously those are two different, likely or, it's two different thresholds. And from our side, we'd like, it's a compressive for confidential, you've got a certain level for the next level of secret, it's a higher level, and then the last level of top secret is the top level. So we need to just have an understanding of that. The second problem in the section as it is in the bill that I've also got is I don't understand why in the 15.1a it refers to the unlawful disclosure, and then 15.2a it speaks about the disclosure, and maybe we all need to just apply our minds as to why the word unlawful disclosure is not included under 15.2a and 15.3a. Seems to be an inconsistency, which is a separate issue. But Chair, we broadly support this just to have a consideration as to how we increase the levels of threshold as we go along. This is a very, very key clause. Thank you, Chair.
Our proposals from the beginning insisted on not merely speculative harm flowing from any disclosure, but probable harm. And our proposal, which remains, is that classified information should be sensitive information, the disclosure of which is likely to or could reasonably be expected to cause demonstrable harm. And we are therefore on the same page, as it were, with the ANC, which is looking at high thresholds, by which I understand the probable harm concept. Probability and not just speculative possibility. I would have a preference for likely as opposed to reasonable expectation. Is Advocate Swart arguing that you should have different thresholds for the different categories, confidential, secret, and top secret? Is he suggesting that we should have the reasonable expectation of demonstrable harm for confidential material, but the likely harm in the case of secret or top secret? A second point, from what the Honourable Land has just read, he seems to have both security and national security, and I think you surely don't intend that. What we're dealing with is disclosure, which is likely to cause demonstrable harm to the national security, whose definition we have yet to complete. Surely not security and national security. Security is a different thing. It has a definition all of its own, and it has not been any of our thinking to date that classification should rest on anything other than national security, surely. Security is something else. It is. It means to be protected against danger, loss, or harm, and is a condition that results from the establishment and maintenance of protective measures that ensure a state of inviolability from hostile acts.
I just don't understand that thinking of rules. Why would it not then also have an impact on the security? Or is it your case that national security is broad enough to include security?
I'm not sure what security is doing here, quite frankly. Where does it appear in the bill? A definition is there to explain something in the bill? No. And maybe somebody who, maybe the state law advisors can assist us, but where does security appear in the bill. Why is it necessary to have the definition at all? I'm sure it's there somewhere, I just don't know where.
Chairman? I mean, it was the cue to the Republic, but I think the Honourable Smart is right. I mean, national security is defined, security of the Republic is not.
That security is defined.
The security is defined.
I'm asking, does it have to be defined?
Security is defined as protect against danger, loss of harm, and in condition that results from the establishment and maintenance of protective measures that ensure a state of inviolability from hostile act. And I wrote a problematic, this is the difficulty of dealing with a bill without having dealt with the definitions. In my analysis, the word security should not be defined and should not be used. Because throughout we are dealing with national security. National security is defined, and it detracts from the very definition. Because here we are moving away from the notion of harm to deal with demonstrable harm. But then we have another notion of harm, another word harm in the definition of security. Means to be protected against the danger, loss, or harm, but not demonstrable harm. And you get a circularity of definitions which end up chasing their own tails and make it very difficult.
Honourable Member, your motivation seems to be sound. We'll get back to that. I want to recognize the Honourable Chaplain.
The harm we're talking about here is not. We're not talking about the issue of state. We're talking about harm to the individual, to the person. Like we said, that publication of the information that pertains to the medical records of somebody serving in the Secret Service, an agent, his or her ID number and addresses. I think that is the. We're talking about the person and security, not the state.
I wasn't aware that the ANC was contemplating retaining anything personal. Surely, you look after the security of the information of your intelligence community, their names, their postings, their whatever. Surely you do that as a matter of national security under your classification categories. Their name, postings, or whatever, would be sensitive information, the disclosure of which would be likely to cause demonstrable harm to the national security. So isn't that enough? It's because they are intelligence personnel that their details get classified, especially if they are sources. And it's not because it's personal information. It's because they are intelligence personnel. So do you need any reference to what in the bill is 2C or 3C? Surely you don't need it. Surely your operatives are covered by national security applications. Surely we shouldn't be looking at personal.
Chairman? See, I understood, and perhaps I misunderstood, that when we're dealing with personal information, as the Honorable Smith is pointing out, we are not dealing with the information of people in the service, because those are covered by reflection within the national security. We are not protecting just a person per se. But we are dealing with information of third of people, for reasons other than national security. If somebody is sent in harm's way, its location and its identity are protected not for national security but for purposes of individual security. Honourable
Van Brecht. No, I agree with Honourable Augustini. That is exactly what we said when we talked about personal security. For instance, if you can take it also to an extent, we soon going to pass a forensics bill, and we're going to have a DNA database. And it would also be, for instance, protecting that information. Let's say, for some other reason, you're a suspect, your DNA gets taken on on this database for purposes of solving the crime. And at some point in time, there might be a defect, it might be something that you don't want others to know, private information, and it should protect those kinds of information. It should protect your information in terms of also your information at home of it, your health records, those kinds of things. They are personal information, but it's not only for agents. That's the point. It's information that can be a security risk to individuals as well.
We are passing another bill to take care of that type of example, which is the protection of personal information. What I thought this would apply to, I would have in mind to, state witnesses. In a situation of state witness, the location of a state witness is not a matter of national security. We are protecting the person, and that information can be top secret, the location of a protected witness, for an interest no greater than the protector, than the protection of the person concerned.
May I just point out, we are indeed writing a law on the protection of personal information, but on your forensic bill, you will most certainly not be able to build a database of people's DNA if you don't de-identify it, and therefore it may not contain, without intruding on personal privacy, the things that you have just cited. The medical details, the familial tracing, which is one of the great dangers of DNA sampling. So that database of yours will not be personal information in the sense that it will have to be de-identified, not that? It means you take out the genetic information, which is precisely private. So we have yet to thrash that one out, and you haven't done that part of the bill. You are the dealer. All right. But you are... I don't think the idea with a database of that nature is to classify it. Surely it's something the police are going to be using all the time? No.
I need to recognize the honorable fiscal decision in the honorable contract. Yeah. If somebody tips the police that there are drugs that are being carried in a plane, is that not threatening to them? We are not protecting an individual, we are protecting that information because it's valuable to the state, but not that good for the individual. Honourable Van Beek?
As the Honourable Smith quite rightly say, it's something that still needs to the bullies and its beginning phases. I mean, we had a bill before us, and exactly because of these kinds of problems, we actually said, no, we're not going to go ahead with this bill. And that's why we restarted the bill. The fact of the matter is, I didn't put that example on the table in terms of us to argue about it. What I was saying is, it's not only the state that keeps DNA. Yeah, I know. You talk about the personal information bill that you're doing. But the fact of the matter is that maybe health is a bad example. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but maybe health is a bad example. But the fact of the matter is it's about more than protection of just agents. I think we mustn't look in a narrow way at the bill in terms of that this bill is written for the security services. We have had this debate about this over and over again.
Honourable members, I I've been sitting with as a chair now. Am I no longer the chair of the members? You must tell me I can go there. The Honourable Lander, I see these conversations or meetings taking place that I'm not chairing. I'm going to get to you, Honourable Lander, and then to the Honourable Abrasini. But before I get there, I want to you, perhaps you haven't observed, what you're dealing with here is the definition of confidential information. Okay? So have a look at your definition clause, which you are going to come to later. And what you come to accept here needs to define with a certain amount of accuracy what we mean by confidential information. And obviously when we talk about secret and top secret, one doesn't want the three definitions to be so unbalanced that the one is using the words from America and the other one from China and maybe one's from Russia. We need to have the language court system. So that's another consideration, Honorable Landers.
Chair, if at any stage you see I'm drifting into dangerous waters, please call me to order. I want to extend the example raised by the Honorable Mr. Fisher. Security services, intelligence services, law enforcement agencies are made aware of the bringing into the country, South Africa, of a plane load consignment of drugs. Intelligence services then launch an operation to monitor that plane load, which is leaving from Bogota in Colombia and is scheduled to land at Lanseria or one of the smaller airports in the country. Now, all that information and the outcome of that operation won't in any way affect our national security. It's a plane load of drugs. Can't affect national security. How then do we protect that classified information that pertains to that particular operation? Because releasing that information in any way jeopardizes that operation and its security.
What I'm asking our colleagues who work with police, the police already have their own.
I had recognized that the Honourable Embassy would follow the Honourable Lawyers and you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, with the power of the chair, like any other power, use it or lose it. Let me apologize. I should have done it before. I stepped out for a couple of minutes. I hope I missed, but there are some gentlemen from the German embassy and the German government who came to visit me, and I asked them to join us here because I couldn't meet with them because of this, and I might need to escape after this section 15 again for a few minutes. But I pleaded yesterday, and I would like to do it again. We've got a long way to go. Let us please not argue by way of examples. No, first of all, doesn't show well. I mean, we should be able to engage in notional debates. And we get dragged into example and debating example. And notionally, there cannot be anything wrong in classifying information to the disclosure of which may endanger the physical security of a person, or the disclosure of which may endanger the life of an individual concerned. Now, besides trying to get some language which is consistent with one another, I don't think that notionally any of us has a problem with this. You give the information, the guy dies, notionally. Don't give the information out. So, I'm not sure what the point is. Don't look at me in the tone of voice.
Honourable Member, I am shocked with your proposal that examples should not be used, because even a poor philosopher like Socrates would really disagree with you. examples are really the core of the way one makes a point. Perhaps he has not visited our courts. His examples are really the order of the day in court. You're not going to get anywhere if you can't. The Honorable,
try to get us to move fast.
As much can we get on the Honorable Evrasini? He's becoming impatient. I thought you had your hand up and then you were trying to jump ahead of the Honorable Evrasini and I stopped you.
Discussing the different levels, or are we now focusing only on the personal information? Firstly, Chair, can I say I think examples are very of the way to use it. It most definitely it helps us understand the practical application. Many of us are not lawyers here, and I think it's very useful to use practical examples, and I'll encourage it, in fact. Secondly, definitely with respect to my colleague. Chair, just let's get. Well, I think our difficulty, if we look at the different levels of classification, your confidential, your secret, your top secret, I don't follow the exact proposal that is presented, and it might be useful to have it in writing, because you've got to have a progressive, in, as you said, we're looking at different models, you've got to have a progressive classification, and at the moment it doesn't come through too clearly. That's why we're going around a little bit in circles. It's very important to have the debate, firstly, on the need of the word unlawful or not. Secondly, on the need of the word is likely or could reasonably. Those are the two options there. And then thirdly, as you go progressively, what words are you going to use? Are you going to use the standard test that you've got just for purely confidential matters under 15.1? Secondly, when you go to the higher level of secret, then are we going to insert the word serious as per the proposed ANC suggestion? You've got to take it a step higher. And then thirdly, on the top secret level, are we going to then use the words serious or irreparable harm or other alternatives as per what we've suggested? You can raise that test. And that's, I think, setting that test that is crucial. We need to all have an understanding. And that's why it's useful to use practical examples as to what would be the implication if you use irreparable or serious or exceptional or those different levels as we go through, and I think this will be the crux of as we progress on this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, that raises a further question.
Interfering with the proceedings, I'd like to speak first. His hand has been up before, John.
This is a proposal to move forward. This is the most important section. I think one of the most important is the one that determines what can be classified under what circumstances. The ANC has made a proposal which substantially changed what was before us. It's pregnant with an enormous amount of consequences and needs to be looked against the definitions. Would it not be better just to pigeonhole this issue, receive the new the new text in writing, and first we can deal with that at the next meeting, so we can all apply our minds to the issue.
The Honourable Chair.
Yeah, I think that is not a bad idea. So you have from us, from the inception, in writing, how we believe that these classification levels should read. And let me just say that it's very important that I think all parties here represented are in agreement on a fundamentally important matter, and that is that the thresholds for the classification level should rest on probability and not just on possibility, not just on speculative harm, but on real and demonstrable harm. And we all hold that position, and that is a very great advance from the bill as published, which rested on speculative harm. And so let's note that fact. It's important. We all agree. We are in agreement on those possibly the most important thing in this bill. Now let's get the wording right. You have ours in writing. It would be excellent, as Dr. Ambrosini proposes, if we could have the full ANC version. I think we have had advocates once also from the beginning. But here's what I want to put to you, whether we shouldn't in addition consider for when we return to talk further, whether we need definitions. Because I hear the one on confidential, which I think is not very far from yours. Sensitive information, the disclosure of which is likely or could reasonably be expected to cause demonstrable harm to the national security. Should we define harm? And it's a question, but it's a very serious one. Or it's likely or could reasonably be expected to prejudice the Republic in its international relations. Ought we not to define what prejudice is? There is in the Canadian Information Security Act a definition of prejudice to the state. It's a very long one, but it's very well worth looking at. I'm sure that you, Chairman, are familiar with it. We will need a definition of prejudice to the state in any case for the offences if we are going to go ahead with that hostile activity offence. We can't just, because remember that espionage rests on the idea of benefiting another state, but the hostile activity offence rests on the idea of prejudicing this state. But there's no definition. So should we not, for the purposes of the classification levels clause, number 15, start looking at whether we don't need definitions? Mr. Mania, who's not here to argue, feels we ought to have one for harm. I'm still thinking about it. I do believe we need one for prejudice. But look at jeopardize in the next classification level secret. That too rests on the idea of harm, in this case serious and demonstrable harm in our formulation. Do we need to define it? Top secret in our formulation is sensitive information that the disclosure of which is likely to or could reasonably be expected demonstrably to cause exceptionally serious or grave and irreparable harm to the national security of the Republic, or could cause other states to sever diplomatic relations. That severing diplomatic relations is easy, one understands what that means. But I'm still asking myself, do we need a definition of harm? Is it doable? And could I just ask other members to either think about it or comment on it, or yourself, sir?
Honorable members, I think that the I can take you back to the history of this matter. There was considerable resistance and opposition to this particular clause. And I think the honorable members are correct when they say this is a very crucial clause in the bill. And I think it is the minister that came in and started to suggest to the committee that perhaps these thresholds could be changed to limit. So out of the minister's response to the queries and the concerns that were raised at the public hearings. So the Honourable Swartz will remember, he was the first one to show excitement when the indication came. This alteration, if one wants to call it a concession under the ANC sees it as a concession, is not new. In fact, there had been proposals at the time when the matter was debated. There had been proposals put forward as to the words that should be used, and if I recall correctly, the Honorable Swartz was very much involved in proposing very much similar words that appeared here now. So
nobody said that anybody made any concessions. I was just celebrating the fact that we all have very similar positions, and it's a very fundamental.
I'm saying in concession in the sense that it had moved away from the position in the bill, original bill. And it was the minister that came and said, look, yeah, I agree. You know, there is something that you need to look at there, and I'm quite happy to recommend to Parliament that clause, you know, should be changed. It was a recommendation from the minister when he came to address us on his response to the public hearings and the concerns that was raised. It was in that context that the concession from the minister came.
I don't even remember, but never mind who made what.
So I'm just taking you back on the history. So this is not new words that have come up. But the Honourable Swartz, he goes back to his notes, and that he will know that he had been party to recommending how this thing should be. And then also when we had the presentation on the international best practice, if you go back to that, you will see that these words are in fact almost word for word taken from the international best practice, how it has been worded in legislation in other jurisdictions. That's my recollection of the matter. So I'm not surprised to see that it has been proposed by the ANC in this context, but honourable members, can we have progress now? I've allowed considerable interaction on this one because you are very close here to consensus. I think it's just a question of words, but I can see that the parties are very close, and if we can particularly have consensus on this clause, it would go a great far way to going forward. Honourable Landers.
Well, thank you, Chair. I wanted to gently remind us that we're still busy with clause 15, and we had introduced the new threshold, which seems to find favour with the qualifications that Mr. Swart introduced. But having listened to him and the debate, I'm still inclined to say that the threshold as we've introduced should remain, so that it includes is likely or could. But I thought that we seem to have got stuck with the use of the word security under sub 2A, and I had to mentally make an adjustment and take myself back to being a member of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. I was very ably assisted by Mr. Fisher with his example, and then it clicked that the example of the operation monitoring the plane load of drugs into South Africa falls under the category of security. There would be those who could argue that a plane load of drugs from Bogota landing in South Africa might even constitute a threat to our national security. Given its quantity. But it certainly constitutes a threat to security, physical and otherwise. There may well be other examples I could use, Chairperson, but that's the only one I can think of now. And whether the use of security here is apt, maybe we can argue about that, but we can't think of another description to accommodate that situation. Plain load of drugs coming into South Africa doesn't affect national security, clearly not. But the details of that operation certainly affect the country's security.
Chair, I think we're dealing with security now. I just wanted to briefly comment on what you said, and you were quite correct. In as much as it was the proposal from our side, I just checked my first document to introduce the objective test as per PIA. The words which are now coming from the ANC that could reasonably be expected, I don't think is likely or is a major difference of opinion. To my view, what I argued in my paper was to tie it in with the PIA test. My difficulty is just to, at this stage, is just to see how it fits into each one, 15.1A, 2A, 3A, the exact wording, because we would, as I understand the suggestion at the moment, we're dealing with 2A, personal information, and we've added the test there, but we need it under, 2C, we need it under 2A as well, obviously, and then it's just to be clarity as to the formulation of how we're going to apply that test. Is it in 2A as well?
thoughts?
It's in every level.
It's in 2A, sensitive information, and it's in 2C, personal information, the disclosure of which is likely or could reasonably be expected, the physical security of a person. And there, within your sources, etc.
So, Chair, that would be, once we see the draft in it, I think we will find very good consensus on this issue.
Honourable Landers has just said that he is in fact thinking of sources when he refers to personal information, amongst others. I would just repeat, consider whether you can't anyway classify your sources without having a category for personal. And let's not forget that one of the reasons one would want to think twice about creating a category which could be abused is that you already have the situation under the MIS where under the two lowest levels of classification, the confidential and the, what is the one below it? Restricted. You can actually classify personal information about an individual if it would inconvenience him or her. Now that's a kind of a recipe for cookery, you know, because you can classify away embarrassing, inconvenient, misdemeanors, corruption, and so forth. So one wants to bring an end to a situation in which individuals are protected for the wrong reasons, which appears to be the extant position under the myth. And so one would just need to be sure that the idea of personal classification could only be done in the interest of proper national security. So much rests on that definition. So that would be one of my concerns, that this might create an avenue for abuse.
Honourable members, you will call what happened in Troy. I don't need to repeat what happened. Helen of Troy, you know the story. He was an individual and it caused one massive war, even though it is written in the ancient histories. But it's those type of scenarios, you know. You want to do an assassinate somebody, you could start a war. One of our members, look. Honourable Front, let me just help you here. If you have a very in-depth understanding of the MIS document and you look at this now, at what we are trying to do here, then you will immediately see that far less information is going to be classified under the law, the bill, than what has been classified under the MIS. And that must be a good thing. Because you no longer have restricted, and what is being your lowest classification level, which is confidential, is so very strict too. And so things that have previously been classified as confidential are no longer going to be able to be classified. And I thought perhaps for those of you that are not familiar with MIS, and that is worried that there's going to be this wide frenzy to classify everything, now it's not going to be possible under the bill. Honourable Landers, I think you have started. Well, let's finish clause 15 and then decide how we're going to proceed. Because it seems to me that you still wanted to say something under clause 15.
It's just in line with the rest of the. It's introducing this new threshold. And so under sub 3A. Sub 3 says state information may be classified as top secret if the information is A, sensitive information, the disclosure of which and again our threshold is likely or could reasonably be expected to cause serious or irreparable harm to the national security of the Republic, or is likely, and this is the may comes out, and the threshold is likely or could reasonably be expected to cause other states to sever diplomatic relations with the Republic.
And furthermore?
Furthermore, under C, which is this, personal information, the disclosure of which is likely or could reasonably be expected to endanger the life of the individual concerned. Chair, we then want to introduce a sub 4 in 15, which reads as follows. The classifying authority must use the guidelines for classifications levels set out, and here, in keeping with our earlier decision, as prescribed.
Honourable members will note, if they are using the recent working document, that subclause B has already been deleted, because it deals with commercial information. So the numbering will change. Have the honourable members got that? Now, honourable members, the way forward?
The classifying authority must use the guidelines for classification levels as prescribed.
Undertaken to giving you the clause 15, and if they've determined that they would give you the rest of that, if they have in fact got that, then I think they would notify me and the staff, and that will be forwarded to you over the weekend too.
There's not a huge difference from your the previous document. But here and there are clauses that we would just like to look at, and it would help us take in the process quicker, because then we have to consider what are the implications, or if I've got it before and we can see it's innocuous, it's something we can live with. Thank you.
There seems to be provisional approval of your request. Now, honourable members, it's too early to let you go. Can we proceed? Is there coffee? Honourable members, you've worked for less than an hour. You want a coffee break?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm overruled here. We shall adjourn for 15 minutes until 11:15. Just before I proceed on, is there any objection beyond the Landers is asking? Because there are some minor proposals that he wants to make, if he can be allowed to complete those proposals. And can just hear what the input might be from the other members. Any objection, then the Honourable Landers can stop.
But does that mean you abandon the clause by clause approach? Or is there something in the clause that he has not enumerated in the right?
Yes.
Chairperson, clause 16 deals with the authority to classify information. And we begin by saying that clause 6, the word automatically regarded is removed and replaced by the word deemed, so that the clause reads, when state information is categorized as classified, all individual items of information that fall within a classified category are deemed classified. In subclause 7, proposing a new subclause 7, which will read as follows. Where a person is a member of security services, as contemplated in Chapter 11 of the Constitution, who by the nature of their work deal with information that may fall within the ambit of this Act, that person must classify such information in accordance with classification levels as set out in Section 13. There's also a new 8, which reads as follows. question for confirmation of the classification. And then there's a new 9. The information classified in terms of subsection 6 must remain classified until the head of an organ of state in question decides otherwise. We can come back to that, Chairperson. The others are very, well, they seem minor, but my experience is what seems minor.
Those are proposals to
16. Okay. I want to go on to 17.
Would you want to deal with?
Fine.
Our position on 16, as reflected in our paperwork, is that 5 and 6 must be deleted on the same argument we have made before, that you can't classify a whole integral file block, file series, or categories of state information. And so we move deletion 5 and 6. 6 is one of those that Mr. Lanters has just moved an amendment to. Then on his new proposal, his new sub 7, this is precisely the matter which yesterday, I asked ANC to comment on this proposal. And Mr. Lanters was quite angry with me. He said that he had never proposed such a thing and therefore it wasn't the ANC. And then you said, sir, that you had proposed it. So in other words, you must be the author of this document called the African National Congress Submission Number 2. According to your document, the purpose of this amendment now moved is to prevent a loophole in the classification process. Is that still the argument? As it relates to oversight bodies that deal with classified information, and that this is to avoid them being left out of the chain of classified information and the management thereof. Is that the rationale behind the proposed sub-clause 7? Because the wording you've given us doesn't make that crystal clear to me, namely where a person is a member of the security services, who, by the nature of their work, deal with information, classified information, such information is deemed to be classified until the head of organ of state in question decides otherwise. Those words to me don't quite capture the argument. But so is that still the argument? That's the question. Is that still the argument that we don't want to create a loophole as it relates to oversight bodies? We look at the wording. I'm not sure it captures that.
Allow me first to answer the document is not my document. The idea might have been my idea, but it is an ANC position.
As of today, not yesterday.
I think you must not interfere. They have offered you membership in the past. You must not interfere. If you want to know what happens in the camp of the ANC, you must join them. I'm sure you will find out what happens there. The situation that is being addressed here, and you must be conscious of the fact that this is the question of who is to classify. You know it is the head of the organ of state, and there has been concern about the qualification or the status of the person that is going to be tasked with classification, and also when the thing is the powers to be delegated at a particular senior level. But in practice, those people that work in your Chapter 11, your security people, have a particular environment that they work in that is totally different from your bus company and your shop board. You can take, for example, the South African Secret Service. I can tell you something that you might. They have got legitimate presence in a number of countries all around the world. I can't tell you when they go there, just as our bill is requesting, they register as agents from the South African intelligence agency. They register there with those governments, and they are then able to work with those governments on projects that are beneficial to both countries. The level at which those people operate are not the level of head of organization, but those people work these together, intelligence, and to send those things home. You have people in Africa that are walking around in the bush, in the jungle, in Congo, in the desert, that are agents working for South African intelligence agencies. They gather information. The level at which they are employed is not that of a DG or of an head of an organ of state, but the purpose of their work is to gather intelligence and to send that information back home. Now, surely that information needs to be classified, because very often these people are working in covert environments. They might have infiltrated one of the rebel groups that are busy operating in a particular country, and they send this information home at the risk of being killed if they were identified. And hence, the information is very often sent through communication channels, electronic, wireless. And those things can be intercepted, so they get encrypted. The point that has been made is that, nevertheless, that information is classified. And when it gets to the other end, it is classified. What this clause is saying, they should have the power to classify. What would be the purpose of you having agents out there? What would be the purpose when they send in very... They are the ones that are in fact sending the most sensitive information back to headquarters, where information gets gathered, compiled into documents, and then an assessment is done. But they, those field workers, as we call them, are the ones that do the hardest work, and they're the ones that we are, that this particular clause is trying to cover. And what it is saying, that you're still going to be guided by the book. You are going to be trained so that you don't just go and classify. But over and above that, there is still a further included protection, because ultimately the head of that organ of state still has to verify whether this information has been properly classified or not. So those field agents are not the final say as to whether the information is classified. And what the Honourable Lawrence is saying in the end, that the information classified in terms of this section must remain classified until the head of the organ of state in question decides otherwise, and that's to get the information to headquarters. Now, you can understand the serious problem. Take this away. Who's going to do the classification now, according to what we are asking, the head of the organ of state? Or somebody senior enough? Because what we're now suggesting, that the head of the organ of state must fly all around the world to all these places where we have overt presence. I've got no comment on the COVID presence.
Thank you very, very much for that explication, which sounds good to me. And I will obviously discuss it with my colleagues, in particular Dirk Stubber, who used to be a member of the Secret Service. No, just before I take a position on behalf of the rest of my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Honourable Swartz, are you going to be heard, or shall I pause?
May I just ask, I didn't catch the word in of your previous document. You've got difference between your previous, or just maybe repeat the clause again, just read it.
It says the following, the nine, it's a nine, the information classified in terms of subsection 6 must remain classified until the head of an organ of state in question decides otherwise.
The previous clause, that's your previous one. Yeah.
All right, the previous one is an 8. It says the following. The member of the security services must submit the classified information to the head of an organ of state in question for confirmation of the classification. Now, the gentleman or the lady is sitting in the city of Toronto. Information comes in to him or her. He can't submit it in that crude form to his DG for classification. He has to there and then classify it. Yes, but
the honourable members will see it to those people that work in the environment. This is clearly not a gift that is going to be granted to all organs of state. Restricted to those security services in Chapter 11. It's not for anybody else, because that is the environment that those people.
I see Tom Kaya classifies our committee in admitting notices. Because I won't say for your eyes only.
I don't know. She's got no authority to classify. I've not delegated any of my powers.
It's only because of Nick 007.
Honourable members, I think you're more comfortable with the explanation. Can we proceed? Because I take it you want to see this thing. You want.
There was a useful suggestion in the ANC's previous position relating to the word at a sufficiently senior level under 16.2. Now, which you might have overlooked, but I thought it was positive because at the moment 16.2 reads, a head of the organ of state may delegate in writing authority to classify information to a subordinate staff member. So the delegation can go right down to the office messenger. And I think the idea was to lift that to read at a sufficiently senior level, and that's something you may wish to consider.
May I support that? It's the point that Theo could see and assist us from early on.
Chair, I was coming to that. No, sorry.
I'm sorry, I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
Is it under 16?
Yeah.
Okay, not under 19. Containing both.
Page 5 of your previous document. And it might be later as well.
Also in 19. All right, Chair, then let me deal with that. I think there we must concede. It's just that we're caught in this instead of sufficiently senior. That's fine. But it comes in under 16.2 as well as under 19. My notes omitted it under 16. I'm glad that it was brought to my attention. I trust that the drafters have noted that. Chairperson, and then I go on to 17. Subclause 1I, and all we're doing there is taking out the words ought to and replacing them with the word must. So it reads as following: classification decisions must be assessed and weighed against the benefits of secrecy, taking into account the following factors, and those factors are listed.
Clause 17, sub clause 1, I.
We have nothing under 18, but we do have changes to 19 and 21. It's the amendment that Mr. Swart brought to my attention. We're also bringing it in here, which reads, in writing to a staff member at a sufficiently senior level. Instead of specified officials comes out, and it reads, in writing to a staff member at a sufficiently senior level within the organized state. Our final proposed amendment, Chair, is in clause.
In my written amendment, I make the proposal that directions for classification should become conditions for classification. It's something you may wish to think about, but directions, it's not a big point. What is, however, a big point is in 17.1 sub A, the assertion secrecy exists to protect the national interest is wrong. And we propose instead secrecy is justifiable only when necessary to protect national security. You may remember that is the position under the international law expressly included in our constitution. Secrecy is justifiable only when necessary to protect national security. So that is quite an important point. In addition, we would propose the deletion of 1B Roman 4, unlawfully restrain or lessen competition. Now, although that would be a desirable thing, we have taken out all of the commercial considerations in this bill, so you may wish to contemplate taking that out. Then, in I, 1I, on the subject of the risk of loss of information in that Roman 3, it's my view that you don't need classification for dealing with the risk of loss of information. To me, it's implicit that when you classify and start safeguarding, you are guarding against the risk of loss. So I would say classification decisions must be assessed and weighed against the benefits, and there we propose of openness. Classification decisions must be assessed and weighed against the benefit of openness, taking into account the following factors. Surely your standard is openness and not the benefit of secrecy. And the factors being the vulnerability of the information, the threat of damage from the disclosure, and my question, should we not delete the risk of loss of the information? Because if you have information and you think, oh dear, I must make sure this isn't lost, then you look after it. You don't have to classify. Classification is not aimed at preventing loss. It's aimed at other things. And I think that those are all of the proposals under 17. 18, which the ANC did not address at all, is something of which we move the deletion. This is the provision which leads later on in the bill to the offence of possession, which is one of the most contentious matters in this bill. We move the deletion of 18. 18 says, a person who is in possession of a classified record knowing that such record has been unlawfully communicated, delivered, or made available, other than in the manner and for the purposes contemplated in this Act, must report such possession and return such record to the police. So journalists, amongst others, who come into possession of a leaked classified document must take it straight to the police, and the offence deeper into the bill then makes that punishable. We move the deletion of this provision and the offence later, and you, Cameron, do know. In Canada, a similar provision and a similar offence has been struck down by a court in Ontario, the Supreme Court in Ontario, and ever since that day, nobody in Canada has tried to prosecute anybody for such possession. So it's a paralyzed provision in Canada. We believe we ought not to have it at all. And let me stop there, because I think Mr. Landers wants to move on to his next clauses.
Yes,
Chair, I think 17 is a very important clause, and it's often overlooked when we do consider. I do support my colleague's 17.1a proposed suggestion to amend that. That will bring it in line with our previous suggestions to introduce that justifiable test, and I think that is something we should consider. But it is very clear to highlight the fact that it renders illegal, with the subject of a penalty at a later stage, any classification of information which may be used to, under 17.1b, conceal an unlawful act or omission, such as a crime, incompetence, inefficiency, or administrative error, or restrict access to information, or prevent embarrassment. And those are very, very important clauses that we need to bear in mind as we're considering the whole ambit of the act, that it is a criminal sanction to do that, which we obviously support. Chair, but I also, on 18, as we've said before, that will come up later with the whole debate again about the public interest offence. But again, at this stage, we want to just say some record, as per our previous document, that this clause should be deleted, or at the very least to amend that mere possession is not punishable. And we can have that debate again when we're considering the public interest defence and the prior override and the whole implications. But I do want you to alert you to that Ontario decision court case where similar provisions were found unconstitutional. The penal provisions, and we can have a discussion on that at a convenient stage. It's very important for us. And the particular case is Juliet O'Neill. It's a Canadian Ottawa Supreme Court case where the court found its penal provisions unconstitutional in that it conflicted with the constitutional rights of freedom of the press and freedom of expression, which has resulted in the whole penal provisions around journalists being in possession of leaked documents being subject to debate and openness at this stage. So if we are considering international best practice, I think we really need to deliberate on that issue as well, but at a convenient time future.
Honourable Fischler, the Honourable Landers, and then the Honourable Appleseed.
Honourable Chair, for me it is very strange for Honourable Mann to say that if somebody gets in possession of a classified
clearly we don't agree with both Dean Smuts and Steve Swart. The issue of
17.1a, we had agreed that the word interest in national interest would be replaced by security. So perhaps there's an opportunity to find one another when it comes to that. I'm surprised that Dean Smuts and the DA want to remove 17.1b Roman 4. Because B reads as follows: classification of information may not, under any circumstances, be used to unlawfully restrain or lessen competition. So Dean Smuts is saying, no, it must be used to restrain.
No.
Yes, because you want to take it out.
Yeah.
But you said it must be removed.
I said, although it is a desirable end, we have decided to take commercial classification out of this bill, and therefore we should think of whether, oh, don't do your outrage performance. Although we have removed commercial, mine's not a performance, it's genuine. We have removed commercial classification from the bill, therefore does it not follow that this ought not to be here, although it is a desirable goal. That's the way I phrased it.
Let's keep it. Mr. Chairman, since you haven't heard from me for a while, allow me one item of leniency within this. This is all fine, but what does possession mean? I mean, possession is to be in exclusive control of something. But possession of information is when you acquire it, you read it. You are informed of the information. So once you receive the information, you are in possession of the information. I tell you, you know. You are in possession of it. Take a piece of paper, see top secret information. I pass it to... No, this is not the case. I'm not doing it again. I'm passing it to Steve Schwartz. He reads it. Is in possession of information. And I go back to what I did the last time around. And this is the issue of when the gene is out of the bottle, the gene is out of the bottle. The issue is not exclusively that of possession. It's the fact that there must come a time at which the classification no longer stands, the document is no longer classified. We all agreed that when we read a secret from a newspaper, us reading that secret, therefore becoming in possession of that information, cannot be such that we get punished for it. We are reading from a newspaper. So at that extreme, we all agree on a public domain exemption. We are in possession of something that, according to this language, we know to be a secret, we not to be classified, we willfully take it, we read it, we buy the newspaper, the top secret information released by Julian Assange, grab the newspaper and read it.
On your own theory, you're not supposed to use examples.
So at this point, when the information is in the public domain, when does it start? And this is very important. This is the crucial issue which affects all of these.
Remember, I must on the point of order.
No. Where does it come?
Because we have public domain thing, you have raised it, and we have dealt with it. I don't want you to raise it.
No, we haven't dealt with it. I made a presentation. I mean, we have voted on anything else. If you want to...
You made a statement there to say that there was an agreement of some sort on this public domain thing.
Is there? And I have an amendment to 17. We are on 17.
Yes. So talk on 17.
Hmm?
You on 17.
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is my amendment, 17.7, mm-hmm. on ISP 3, and I'm just presenting it. No, it's an addition. You don't tell, you've got 17, it's an addition on ISP 3. Oh, sorry, 17.3. I'm sorry, apologies. Without glasses, it looks like it's 17. And let me say, any classified information which falls in the public domain or is disclosed in a manner which makes such information accessible by a person older than those authorized to access it, shall be deemed no longer classified or classifiable in terms of this act, save in respect of anyone who first caused such information to become of public domain or source disclosed. This is what happens in America in terms of best practices. You can't touch Julian Assange because you received it. That's why he could be incriminated on Trump charges of sexual offenses. Let's try it. We'll have a private discussion on that. But the fact is that it's not been charged. Julian Assange has not been indicted by any court in the United States. Because of this principle, the person who leaked it, the soldier, the GI who leaked it, he will spend the rest of his life. He will spend the rest of his life in jail, probably. But the next guy who received it, there is nothing you can do. It's no longer classified. So this goes to the situation which affects all the media. Once they receive a document and they open the envelope, it's closed, they open the envelope and there is a big document that says top secret. It's right there in their hands. They are in possession of the information if they committed a crime. And I suggest this language I crafted very carefully. And the other thing this language says that once it is open, once it's no longer a secret, once it's in the public domain, it stays in the public domain. You can't reclassify something that we all know about. And why do I say that? Because in other fields of law, like for the law of privacy, things come into the public domain and leave the public domain. You're entitled, you lose your privacy as you become an important person, you become public domain, you a public figure, and then as you leave the public figure status, you are re-entitled to your privacy. That can't be in respect of secrecy. Once it's the public domain, stays in the public domain. This is important, Mr. Chairman, to all of us, to the country, to the press, to the media. So let's complete not to disregard it to simply or to immediately.
The Honorable London says, and then the Honorable News.
Well, Chairperson, we don't have America's First Amendment. This is South Africa. Perhaps Dr. Ambrosini would like us to have it. Well, let me finish. Now, let's look at what has happened in America. Bradley Manning releases the information. We are saying in this bill, when Bradley Manning does that, he must be arrested and prosecuted. That's fair. Similarly, we are saying the person he releases the information to then has an obligation to return it to the authority. You are saying, through you, Chivers, that it is correct that Julian Assange should not be prosecuted. Yet Bradley Manning is prosecuted, and no one raises an eyebrow at the fact that Bradley Manning is, well, he's not even prosecuted, he's incarcerated. I'm not aware that there was a charge in the prosecution, a trial or six.
They're drawn the key away.
Well, that's the point. Now, it's not a very good example you're referring us to. And so I can understand why you don't like referring to examples. This is a poor one. Because all of us who are looking at the situation are saying, but if Bradley Manning is incarcerated for releasing the information to Julian Assange, then both of them should be prosecuted, charged and prosecuted. And in terms of our law, with our equality clause and our approach in the Constitution, that would be the appropriate thing to do. The person who releases the information and the recipient. And that is what 18 seeks to do.
I have the Honorable Inspector and the Honorable Chamberlain.
I think the very last argument is a terrible argument. But may I just say, as to the Honourable London, although we don't have the First Amendment which says Congress shall pass no bill, we do have something remarkable, and that is that we have included in Section 16 the free speech provision, explicitly media freedom, and that has consequences. So the media does have a remarkable degree of protection under our free speech provision, which we should never lose from sight, because it will form part of such arguments as we make later, alongside the arguments on the right of access to information. What I thought I might usefully do, Chairman, is just on Mr. Fichler's point, because I wish to address it in sincerity, because he raises it absolutely sincerely. How can we possibly be opposed to the idea that a person should not give classified information back to the police? And so I thought I would just point you to the sections of the Canadian law that the Ontario Court struck down, and why they did, because it addresses exactly the same issue. Just before I do that, since we are dealing with Mr. Assange, it's a matter that's quite interesting to reflect that the Canadian definition of purpose is prejudicial to the interest of the state, which I earlier argued we should look at for our own hostile activities offence, but also possibly for the Clause 15 classification. That Canadian approach to purposes prejudicial to the safety or interests of the state includes a provision which arguably could have caught Mr. Assange there. It says, it deals with, this is one of the purposes prejudicial to the state, impairs or threatens the capability of the government of Canada to conduct diplomatic or consular relations or conduct and manage international negotiations. It's quite interesting. I'm not expressing a view in support or otherwise. But the release, particularly of the diplomatic cables, I imagine could have been caught under Canadian law. It's just an interesting factor. And I hope we'll whet your appetite, in fact, look at the Canadian definition of what are purposes prejudicial to the state, because we will need the definition. But Mr. Fichler, in Canada, what that court struck down, and which has paralyzed this law, is precisely the following, the Section 4 offences. Communicates any person, every person is guilty of an offence who communicates, in their case, code word, password, sketch plan, model, article, note, document, or information, to any other person. That offence has been struck down. Every person who receives any secret information, unless he can prove that it was contrary to his desire, that has been struck down. And the provision that says a person is guilty of an offence if he or she allows any other person possession or fails to restore the information to a police constable. Those provisions have all been struck down, and they've been struck down under the Canadian equivalent of the free speech right. There was a second ground, which was legality, but now that's not directly relevant. That goes to how their law is written. But those precise things, the thing about the taking it to the police, not using it, not passing it on. An Ontario court struck those down for unconstitutionality, and both their constitution and their law and their general approach is, of course, extremely similar to ours. Our courts frequently lean on their jurisprudence. So it's, what we say is not so crazy. There's a precedent.
Reason I was kind of covered by Anders when he talked earlier, but I just want to make an emphasis that possession and dissemination of information, particularly classified information related to national security, cannot be condoned in any way, and that anyone stealing, what if this person who steals or disseminates this information is an agent representing another intelligence organization abroad that is hostile to the Republic? I think that's where I found why are we so soft with people who steal information, sell it and then disseminate it, you know, because the purpose of dissemination might be to send it to other like-minded organizations that are hostile to the Republic.
No moments before I go to the singing. Again, you see what point has been missed here is that if you agree that they are legitimate secrets that need to be protected, and I think there is a general agreement that the disagreement lies in the variety. Now, let's take one of those secrets that you agree should be protected. It conforms in all manner to the requirements. There's no illegality in the document. There's no environmental or maladministration. And the whole purpose of classification is to protect the disclosure of such documents. The only way you can protect it is to punish people that in fact make disclosure. Otherwise you might as well not have the law. Now what you have is a legitimate secret, if I understand your arguments correct. Somebody then, on the Honorable Apostini's version of events, gives it in an envelope to somebody, and the moment he opens it up, it is now in the public domain and it no longer has the protection of its classification. This is the very secret that you say needs to be protected. Now surely there is something wrong with it. This is not the secret that should not have been protected in the first place because it's got all these impediments in it. The head of the organ of state was hiding some corrupt activity. That's another matter. Let's just deal with the one that you agree should be protected. How can it be correct that when this document comes in there, we have a criminal law that comes from Roman times. Our common law on criminal procedure provides that anybody that gets involved with that document, from the time it leaves its protection, is an accessory after the fact. Are you saying now that you want to change that principle in our criminal law? Well, I was not hoping that you would. I was trying to clarify your position.
Isn't it useful?
You don't want me to finish. if you want, you can have off the argument. The Honourable Apostini, I won't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, you are perfectly entitled to argue from the chair. Are you finished?
I'm not finished, but I'm not going to proceed because you want to intervene, so go ahead.
No, I just raised my hand. If my raising a hand would stop people from speaking, it would be the first time. No, please do continue. I will speak if you have. But should I speak, Mr. Chairman? May I speak? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me first get rid of the red herring. We do have a First Amendment clause in South Africa. I happen to have written it because it was first written in the Constitutional KwaZulu-Natal of December 2010, which was the only Bill of Rights which went to the World Trade Center, which was copied in the interim constitution, which ended up in the last constitution. So we do have that protection. But I hear what you're saying, Mr. Chairman. I hear what you're saying, but please answer the question. Because that's relevant. We all agree that if you read a secret from a newspaper, you, the reader, cannot be brought to jail. I told the secret the last time around. It was published in the front page of the Cape Times. The people who read it, they knew that was a secret. They cannot go to jail. I think we all agree on that. At what point, we all agree that the person who reveals the secret should go to jail. Now, in between, where do you draw the line? Do we, at what point does it go into the public domain? Do we put to jail the printer to put together the typist who put together the newspaper? Because they're in possession. They should stop and say, we're not going to publish them. They're accessory to crime, as you say, without them retyping it. Do we put to jail the people who distribute the newspaper? Because at that point, it's still not in the public domain. And well enough for the fact that they carry it around, it would not go in the public domain. Do we put to jail the editor who decides to publish it? Do we put in jail the journalist who received it? I mean, there must be clarity, because this is the real life of the people in the media, the people who receive it. And this doesn't give us clarity. Have it any way you want it, but please answer the question so that the media knows at what point people go to jail. Because we all agree that once it's in the public domain, once it's in the front page, from that point on, nobody goes to jail. And then if you agree that somebody goes to jail at some point before, in the in-between space, between the first disclosure and the monumental disclosure, then at what degree? If 10 journalists know about it, is it in the public domain? When I told that to the committee and there were 100 people listening, is that in the public domain? And you refer to Roman Dutch law, and the concept that you are referring to is that of publication and republication. That applies to defamation law. If I...
No, you're talking to assist me after the...
Yeah, you made two references.
It's part of...
Accessory after the crime, and I assume that I'll make it myself, the notion of publication or republication, where somebody is responsible for, in terms of defamation law, for repeating something which is the same, or defamatory, and each new repetition of the defamatory statement is a separate publication. So you could have the same concept here. You've got disclosure, and then you've got the further disclosure, and the further disclosure, and the further disclosure, and each of them is punishable. As the first guy tells me, I tell him, she tells the other one, she tells the other one, and everyone speaks about it, it's punishable. But at a certain point, you will all agree that an open secret is no longer a secret. So either you give me the nation, some clear language that says at what point an open secret a secret becomes an open secret, so that we all know about it, or you must accept the only logical approach, that once the genie is out of the bottle, once the safe is broken, once the document is somehow accessible, the information is somehow accessible to people who have no obligation to keep it secret, that document, that information has become an open secret and can no longer be deemed to be classified.
Honorable Abrosini, you're not going to be convinced, perhaps because your hard drive has not got the sufficient capacity to capture all the information that is been disseminated here.
Protection from the chair.
Honorable member, You see, the fundamental principle here, Honourable Member, is that the secret needs to be protected. And the only way you can protect it is to put penalties. Why do we have offences? We have offences because there are law-abiding citizens that witness.
Sir, tell me about the chair. Just answer the question. Again,
I see you don't want to hear. I never stop because I can't see. The only argument that is going to stand is your one because you are not wanting to hear what I have to say.
I've asked a question. Somebody can provide an answer, then we're all happy.
I'm busy answering you. I'm not doing it.
I am. Let's have a
look. Can we have the Honorable Swartz and then the Honorable?
Let's get back to position and not so much public domain.
Chair, the issue to me is, let's look what our existing law already says in prime. And yes, secrecy must be protected, but we've got an existing override that allows, where it's in the public interest, to override even those secrets, and that's the balancing act. Now, yes, at a later stage, you're going to include the override. We are saying that the principle is established. We are not saying for every secret that is leaked, the journalist must not be prosecuted. We are saying the journalist can be prosecuted in terms of this law, and then the public interest defense must kick in, and the court considers balancing the harm that would be caused by the disclosure of that information with the public interest, which is a very narrowly defined public interest, which is already contained in PIE. And I think we need to understand that is already in our law. There are circumstances in national security situations where a secret can be disclosed where there is a public interest override, a very narrowly defined public interest override. And we are saying the logical jump from that is to a public interest defense. And that would cover this issue of the position. We are not saying that a journalist who is leaked the information should not go the route. We are saying give the journalist a public interest defense, which is in terms of our prior, which is already the applicable law. And Chair, it's not a huge jump. And if we start looking at that, and if we start looking at international law and how the courts have already struck down in that Juliet case that we referred to, provisions which fringe the freedom of the press, we stand a strong likelihood of having constitutional problems on these penal provisions if we do not contain a narrow public interest defense. So, Chair, I think it's very important. And just a short word on the public domain. PIA also has a public domain defense, such as SARS, which is a confidentiality clause. There's a public domain defense there. Chair, these are issues which we'll continue to debate, but we need to grasp that we're not saying, you say, secrets must be protected. Yes, in certain circumstances, they must be. But there is also that balance of harm that must be balanced. And we're saying allow a court at a later stage to balance that in terms of time. Thank you, Chair. It all depends how we go on the debate around the public interest defense.
Okay. In the meantime, with the deletion of the
position
and the
defense, Honorable Senior, I've read you already.
No, just a clarification.
I want to clarify that there is a distinction between public interest defense and public domain defense.
Yes.
You could have something which is an open secret, which is not a matter of public interest. It doesn't fall under a public interest defense, but it is something that everyone knows about, everyone talks about, with no particular public interest attached to it. But one can't punish the possession of the information just because the secret is open, and the classification can no longer stand. When there were reasons to classify, there are reasons to classify, but it is now not open, irrespective of public interest.
Significant
pause significant is removed and replaced by or could reasonably be expected to cause a demonstrable harm to the national security of the Republic. Just bear in mind, it says national interest in the original bill, and that changes automatically to national security. Chairperson, that's our last proposed amendment for now. The threshold as we are putting before you is much better.
Also consistent with the earlier proposal. Yes, Honorable Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I would like if yourself and the Honorable Lander to focus just a second on 21, if you would. We suggested its entire deletion because there is what appears a logical inconsistency. On the one hand, you have a provision which determines the criteria under which you can classify. Then you have another provision which says that when the criteria no longer subsist, that it needs to be declassified. And then in between, you've got section clause 21, which gives you a different set of criteria under which it needs to be declassified. If the justification for classification lies in the criteria set out in clause 15, and there is a section further down that says if that doesn't exist anymore, needs to be declassified, how can you have a different set of criteria, whatever they may be, for declassification? There is a conflict. The information needs to be classified for as long as the criteria subsist. Otherwise, from a logical viewpoint, you have a lower threshold for declassification in terms of 21 than for classification, which makes a logical incongruence, a mockery of the criteria for classifications, which appear to be high. And if the relationship is inverse, the notions, the criteria for declassification present a higher threshold, higher benchmark than for classification, then it's nonsensical. Either they are the same and it's pleonastic, or it's higher and it's nonsensical, or it's lower. And it's illogical because then you classify at 10, you declassify as soon as you get at 80, then you should classify at 80. Am I being clear?
Chair, although on the face of it is of course so that the two are not of similar weight, I think I would hate to lose 21 because the criteria for continued classification are very good with the exception of F. And what I think Dr. Ambrosini may not have spotted is the following. The clause called 17, the direction for classification, tells you that your classification decision, your primary classification decision, must be guided by section 21 and what follows in the rest of 17. So, you know, it may be an odd way to approach it, but in fact, the criteria for further continued classification do apply in the primary classification, and that's why I don't wish to lose it.
But then the criteria for classifications are really 21.
I didn't recognize
you. No, I don't mind where they are, but they're good. But there's one that seems very strange to me, and that is 2F. The specific considerations which may you are now going to bring into play when you decide whether information deserves continued classification includes information, the disclosure of which may cause financial loss to a non-state institution or will cause substantial prejudice to such an institution in its relations with its clients, competitors, contractors, and suppliers. This I don't get. What is the state doing protecting the commercial interests of a non-state institution. Is this our friend the tenderpreneurs or what? No?
Chair, it too reads as follows. Specific considerations may include whether the disclosure may cause financial loss, etc., etc. So it deals with a continued classification of information, and then he must apply his mind as to whether the disclosure, in other words, the release of this information, declassification, may cause that.
Chairman? Chairman?
The Honourable will proceed.
Going to the merit of 21, which I think ought to go away, we need to do the following. First, we need to coordinate 21 with 17. Sorry, with 15. Secondly, I mean, this effort is nonsensical unless there is a notion of unlawfulness. Wrongful damage. Wrongful, I mean, not losses, but damages which are wrongful. I mean, why should the state not release information which will get people to stop products from any given company? Now, if the state has information which could shut down a company because its products are not such that the consumer would wish to buy them.
For example, please.
Well, it would be self-evident, but, you know, somebody wrote it there. It's notionally wrong, because it's not the business of the state to withhold information to prevent the non-state institutions from not having financial losses, notionally.
I was going to build an intelligence structure. I was going to be very careful who was going to be in a contract. Much more, but I give you that to think and see how you can, how your brain and how your mind might turn up to what it is that you are complaining about. Well, I'm the one.
Chairperson, in attempting to explain or
United States of America. Dr. Ambrosini is so enamored with. Well, now, she stopped and we stood outside. She said, that's the new embassy. It was still in the process of being built. She said, oh, that's interesting. She said, yes. She said, do you know that every single brick in that embassy came from the USA? This is in Canada. They wouldn't even buy Canadian bricks. Every artisan, every worker who worked on that embassy came from the USA. Every piece of equipment, every conduit, every cable that was installed in that embassy came from the USA. Why is that? Well, it seeks to address that.
National security.
National security.
Not financial losses. And the same thing that what the chairman was referring to is national security. Here there is no national security, financial losses.
Honorable members, if I might interrupt you now, there has been a concern raised by some members who was unaware that we could move and were surveyed. And you should know that some of the flights to some of the provinces are quite difficult. If they don't get those flights, they might be stranded here for the rest of the week. It is under those circumstances that I would like to call a close to this meeting. I know there are some of you that still want to speak. Can we agree that the ANC will send you those documents that they have promised, that those alterations over the weekend, you will look at it and come Tuesday. You will give your view on that and then we will proceed to the next clauses. State law advisor had some homework. I just don't recall it now. But honorable members, if there is no objection now, then with respect to the honorable members, the next meeting is on Tuesday at room 514 Marx Building. That's on the fifth floor, up in the corner. And there's no further questions. Here on the fifth floor, at 2 o'clock. There's no further questions on the meeting. Is there a chair? Mm-hmm.